Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 1185 of the Juice Box Podcast. On today's show, I'll be speaking with Roslyn. She has type 1 diabetes and a child who also has type 1. Today, we'll talk about Roslyn's story that begins all the way back with MPH, and we'll also discuss how different ethnic backgrounds have different pathways to learning about diabetes. While you're listening, please remember that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan or becoming bold with insulin. If you have type 1 diabetes or are the caregiver of someone with type 1, the T1D Exchange is looking for you. They just need you to complete a survey. It takes about 10 minutes. You just have to be a U.S. resident who has type 1 or is the caregiver of one, and you can do this survey. It helps move type 1 diabetes research forward. Your answers will help. T1DExchange.org/juicebox. To save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com, please use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. And if you're going to drink AG1, do it with my link, drinkag1.com/juicebox. And don't forget to find the private Facebook group, JuiceBox Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. US Med is sponsoring this episode of the JuiceBox Podcast, and we've been getting our diabetes supplies from US Med for years. You can as well. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or the number, get your free benefits check, and get started today with US Med. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the only implantable sensor rated for long-term wear, up to 6 months, the Eversense CGM. eversensecgm.com/juicebox.
My name is Rosalind. I'm 42 years old. I was diagnosed with type 1 when I was 12, and I have two children. My son is 13 and my daughter is 9. My son also has type 1. He was diagnosed when he was 7, and he was recently diagnosed with celiac earlier this year.
As well. Okay. And your daughter's 9. She doesn't have... Does your daughter have any autoimmune issues?
Thankfully, no.
Okay. All right. This is on your side, the autoimmune, or are their father's side too?
Until now, I was the only person with an autoimmune. Mm-hmm. I have two siblings and neither one of them has type 1. No one on either side of my family has type 1. Until recently, when my son was diagnosed with celiac, I found out through my mom that we actually have, I have a second cousin. I think, yeah, a second cousin who actually also has celiac.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then that's, mm-hmm. I mean, not a big tree for sure, but at least that's a little more information for you. You were diagnosed when you were 12. That's 30 years ago.
It was in 1993.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. What was that? Do you remember that at all?
I actually do. I remember I started with symptoms towards the end of sixth grade. Obviously, we didn't have a history of it in the family. It was also the 90s. So, you know, no one really, there was no internet or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I remember being very thirsty. I remember the kids would get mad after PE when it was my turn to get up to the water fountain. I also remember kind of like the teacher, like being upset every time I had to go to the restroom. And then I remember also looking back at my pictures. I was so, so, so skinny for my graduation pictures.
Yeah,
I didn't get diagnosed officially until the end of the summer. So I basically went on with these symptoms for like 3 months.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you think it went on for about 3 months?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Lost weight, bothering kids at the water fountain. But do you think the water fountain is even a thing kids understand now? They have bottle filling stations now. Did you know that?
Right. So no, I don't think so.
You remember you would just put your mouth right on it? You didn't even care.
Right. Exactly. Especially when I was going through that. I mean, I would just stand there. And I remember the teacher would count to 10 per kid. So what I would do is stay a little bit extra and then go back to the end of the line and hopefully get another turn. Oh, so wow. I remember that so clearly. Yeah.
Is that a thing you ever, do you recall it being worrisome to you or no?
No, I actually don't, because I don't even think my mom realized it until my stepfather was the one who noticed and said, she's losing a lot of weight. Something doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. Like she, I don't, I don't think she noticed it either.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, right? Like, I don't know how you would. Mm-hmm. Did you go into DKA, or do you remember being taken to the hospital or a doctor's office?
Yeah, no, I did not. I don't think I went into DKA, but I do remember I was in summer camp. And I remember my mom picking me up. And I remember I was just laying down on literally on the concrete as other kids were playing. And so she just picked me up and took me to the children's hospital. Yeah. Because what happened was when my stepfather mentioned to her, she looks really, really thin. Something isn't right. She just took me to the regular pediatrician and they did blood work. So they called her a few days later and let her know, hey, her sugar's high. You got to take her to the ER right now.
And when she goes to find you, you're just lying on the ground.
I remember that. Yes, I was laying. I had like zero energy. And this was in Florida in the middle of the summer. So it was like super hot. And I do remember that. I was just laying down.
Cooking like a fried egg on the ground. Well, imagine that even. Right. Yeah, but seriously, imagine being so depleted that that seems like a reasonable thing to do, laying on the hot ground, you know?
Right. And I remember always like when she would serve me dinner, I would eat all of it. But then I would always, and it was so funny because then later on she was like, I was killing you, because I would always ask for more soda. And my mom was one of those moms. It was okay. She would just give us more soda. And I remember drinking like glasses after glasses of orange soda.
You know, everyone's mom ends up saying that. They're like, oh, I can't believe. Like, my favorite part is when people are like, you know, we were on our way to the hospital. And my kid asked for some food or something, or said they were hungry. And I thought, well, maybe this is their last time. So I got them some big, crazy meal or something like that. And
right.
I mean, your mom was just happy to probably that you were eating, honestly. You know what I mean?
Probably. Yeah. Cause I was so skinny. I have two sisters and we were all very small growing up. So she was probably like, oh, okay. She's finally eating. And then she also thought it was like, oh, puberty and, you know, she's changing and all this other stuff. So she never put the two together.
No, of course not. And what gets you there finally is your stepfather saying, hey, something's wrong. She takes you to the doctor, they do the blood work, and then this whole thing starts for you.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So management 30 years ago looks like what? How many times have you thought, it's time to change my CGM? I just changed it. And then you look and realize, my God, it's been 14 days already? A week and a half? Feels like I just did this. Well, you'll never feel like that with the Eversense CGM. Because Eversense is the only long-term CGM with 6 months of real-time glucose readings, giving you more convenience, confidence, and flexibility. So if you're one of those people who has that thought that, I just did this, didn't I? Why do I have to do this again right now? If you don't like that feeling, give Eversense a try. Because with Eversense, you'll replace the sensor just once every 6 months via a simple in-office visit. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox to learn more and get started today. Would you like to take a break to take a shower? You can with Eversense without wasting a sensor. Don't want anybody to know for your big day? Take it off. No one has to know. Have your sensors been failing before 10 or 14 days? That won't happen with Eversense. Have you ever had a sensor get torn off while you're pulling off your shirt? That won't happen with Eversense. So no sensor to get knocked off. It's as discreet as you want it to be. It's incredibly accurate. And you only have to change it once every 6 months. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox.
It was NPH and regular. Mm-hmm. I still remember the one touch meter, the squared one that took 45 seconds to give you results.
Was that the one that looked like the size of a brick?
It wasn't as big as a brick.
Okay.
But it was, I think it was called One Touch Basic. And then eventually they came up with One Touch 2.
I'm going to try to find a picture of it while we're talking. Yeah,
it was like gray. It was like light gray. And then I still remember the middle was like a darker gray. And then it was 45 seconds to get your results, which was like, oh my gosh, longest 45 seconds.
Were you just like standing there waiting to see if, oh, I am looking at it. Oh my gosh. Uh-huh. You can buy one on eBay still. One Touch Basic by LifeScan.
Yes, yes. It would say that. I remember that. Uh-huh.
Oh, it's fantastic. Look at that thing. But look, you know what it looks like? Wow, this is something no one's, I don't even know if I should bother saying this, but I used to have a handheld football game. But the football players were just dashes on the screen. And the football player that had the ball was a bold dash and the other ones weren't. And then you had these little, I know no one remembers this at all. you're too young for that. You're like, yo, Scott, come on. I had ColecoVision at least. It looks exactly like that. It's crazy. Just a gray box. You described it perfectly, by the way.
It's in my brain. Like, I could literally see it right now and I don't have it in front of me. Yeah.
That's amazing. So let me kind of work backwards a little bit. How is your overall health right now? Do you have any issues?
I luckily do not have any complications whatsoever that I know of. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I get tested. I go to the doctor regularly. So I don't have any complications.
That's amazing. When do you know how long you used regular and NPH for?
I use regular and NPH actually a little bit, like a little too long. I think I started on Lantus and Humalog like in 2005 or 6 or maybe even 7, to be honest with you.
Oh, you were over 10 years doing it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, isn't that something? And then when you moved to the more modern insulins back then, you're not pumping still, you're doing MDI?
I actually, you mean now, current day?
Back then, when you got off regular and NPH, did you go to a pump?
Oh, no, I was on pens.
Yeah, okay. How long did that go for before you made it to a pump?
I actually made it to a pump because of my son, and I actually started on a pump last year.
Ah, this is what I was wondering if you were going to say. So the way you managed was the way you managed. It was working fine for you, and you had no need to change it. What were your A1Cs like over the last decade, for example?
I honestly don't think I ever went past like an 8.
Okay.
I never did. I remember when I first got pregnant with my son and I went in, of course it wasn't perfect. I think it was like a 7.6. Mm-hmm. And then I worked really hard at it and I went down to, I think the lowest I got throughout his pregnancy was probably like a 6.2.
Good for you. Look at that. And then, but mm-hmm. after the pregnancy's over, do you kind of just go back to the way you did it before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So with your MDI, and I have to be honest, like holding an A1C like that coming from the time you came from is very respectable and like good work. You know what I mean? Because how much information did you have about diabetes, honestly?
Honestly, not a lot, but I think I figured some things out. Like I figured what made me feel good and what didn't. Mm-hmm. I also remember as a child, we would go to the clinic for type one. And it was like the day that all the type ones would be seen by an endocrinologist. And I remember a parent who also had type one talking to my mom. So I was born and raised in Miami. So it's a big Hispanic community as my culture is also Hispanic. So we eat a lot of rice, right? Mm-hmm. And beans and stuff like that. And I remember this woman talking to my mom and saying, let her eat as much as she wants, just not as much rice.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that always stuck to me and to my mom. So I would always have more protein and veggies. Also, we had a nutritionist when I was hospitalized. And again, it was a big Hispanic community. So even the nutritionist was Hispanic. And she even said that if you want to eat more protein, eat more veggies, not as much rice. Don't have a lot of rice.
It's crazy how things happen while I'm recording. 2 days ago, I put up an episode. It's a type 2 story with this girl who's Mexican. And the next day, we talked all about kind of culturally how that impacted with food when she was growing up. The next day, I recorded with a woman who has type 1. If I'm being honest, Rosalind, she was a very white lady and she had a very Spanish last name. And I was like, what's going on here? Like when she spoke, you could tell she spoke Spanish. And I was like, wait, what's happening? So I just asked her. Her husband's Mexican.
Oh.
He had just gotten type 2, and that led into more conversation about the culture and the food. And then when you just said today, like, you know, this is my heritage, I was like, what am I on? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is this like Telemundo this week? What's going on here? It's like fantastic.
That's funny to say that because I've been listening to your podcast since my son was diagnosed in 2018. And I'm like, hey, I need to hear more Hispanic stories or other cultures. I need to hear more because I'm like, I know I'm not the only one.
Well, apparently I'm on it this week. So that's fantastic. You said that. I was like, this might be like, I got to look to see if like I made a, like, did I put out an email for like cultural like stuff? And I'm like, I don't think I did. But anyway, so, you know, it's funny, I think. Because when people come on from different cultural backgrounds, they have no trouble saying, look, it's our culture. We eat a lot of this, or there's a lot of pasta or a lot of rice, or, you know, like, mm-hmm. but nobody ever says, look, I have a standard American diet. Culturally, we eat a lot of processed food and a lot of like, it's interesting, right? Isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I actually did hear that episode you're mentioning with the young lady earlier this week. And I remember when she was talking about that. And that's exactly what I thought. I'm like, wait a minute. Every culture's food is actually, there's healthier versions and then exactly. There's the regular good stuff. You know what I mean?
We can all eat chicken and broccoli, but it doesn't matter what your culture is.
Right. It just depends on how you make it. And it's just portion control, in my opinion. And so I learned that early on.
Yeah.
And I tried my best to stick to it. And that's what I did.
I used to hate ordering my daughter's diabetes supplies. I never had a good experience and it was frustrating. But it hasn't been that way for a while. Actually, for about 3 years now, because that's how long we've been using US Med. USmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. US Med is the number one distributor for Freestyle Libre systems nationwide. They are the number one specialty distributor for Omnipod Dash, the number one fastest growing tandem distributor nationwide, the number one rated distributor in Dexcom customer satisfaction surveys. They have served over 1 million people with diabetes since 1996, and they always provide 90 days worth of supplies and fast and free shipping. US Med carries everything from insulin pumps and diabetes testing supplies to the latest CGMs like the Libre 3 and Dexcom G7. They accept Medicare nationwide and over 800 private insurers. Find out why US Med has an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau at usmed.com/juicebox or just call them at 888-721-1514. Get started right now and you'll be getting your supplies the same way we do. I think what people are really saying is they're going, look, over generations, the people in my family have decided that on these days of the year or this day of the week or whatever, it doesn't matter what we eat because it's a thing we do. And so, you know, it's Christmas, so you can eat cookies for breakfast or like, you know, it's this, so that. And, you know, I don't know. I'm interested by it. It's an interesting way people talk about their food. So I don't know. I always like these conversations.
Oh, okay.
You're MDI this whole time. And then, by the way, not an uncommon story. Your kid's diagnosed. And what does that do? It makes you reevaluate yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
What is it you see that makes you think, oh, maybe I should be doing something different?
So first of all, he was diagnosed in 2018. And it's very interesting because I'm not the one who caught it. It was my husband.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. Yeah.
To this day, I'm always like, how did I miss that? So he wasn't even showing like symptoms. There was no weight loss. There was no frequent urination or anything like that. The way we found out was it was Cinco de Mayo weekend. Mm-hmm. And my son has always been a big eater. And so he wanted tacos. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll make him tacos. But he kept asking for more and more food. And I mean, he was 7 at the time. And I think he had like 4 tacos. And my husband's like, something's wrong. Like, why is he sweating like that? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's running around and he's eating. And my husband, for some reason, to this day, I will never know what made him ask that. He goes, get your meter and check his sugar.
Huh.
I was like, okay. I was like, you're crazy, but okay, I'll check his sugar. Check his sugar. His sugar was 220 something. Mm. And I was like, this is not right. So we did a second test and it was 220 something again. Then I checked myself. Check my husband because I'm like, the meter's broken. This can't be right.
Yeah.
And so when we see that it's actually reading right, I mean, the rest is history. We got him. We took him to the ER. And by the next morning, it was, you know, they diagnosed him. It was type 1.
That break your heart or where does it land you, like psychologically?
Oh, my gosh. No, I was devastated.
Why? Tell me what about your life made you feel that way?
I felt really guilty. For some reason, I even got emotional now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
It's okay. He was so young. And that was always my biggest fear. And I felt bad because when we planned to have children, I mean, honestly, he wasn't planned. But before that, I had always asked doctors, what's the likelihood that my kids will get this? And they're like, oh, no, they're likely to, it's the same as anybody else. That's what they would tell me. Mm-hmm. I even had the endo tell me that due to my age, because I had them when I was 29, they were like, the likelihood is even less that your children will have type one. Okay. So I was like, okay, cool. Even as a baby, I asked this pediatrician, they're like, it's he has the same risk as any other child. So then fast forward to this day and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's happening. So my fears, I mean, I guess it's just living with that. And he was so young and, you know, just thinking complications and things like that, even though I didn't have any, but you know, it has always been in the back of my mind that that's something that can happen. So
were you seated with those fears when you were growing up? Did people talk to you like about it that way?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So eat like this, or this is going to happen, like take your insulin, or this is going to happen. Those sort of things were said.
Yes. Not by my mom. My mom never did that. But the endos were not exactly. I still remember one endo. I went in. I don't remember my A1C, so I don't remember what caused him to say this to me. But we go in and he just puts his hands over my eyes. And he tells me, if you continue this, this is what's going to happen. You're not going to be able to see. Mm. I was like, you know, that terrified me. And I was like, oh my gosh.
So did it work? So I've heard it described by people as someone tried to scare me into taking care of myself and it backfired, or they tried to scare me and it worked. Did you, like, were you scared straight or did you just ignore it?
I didn't ignore it. And it also, I also wasn't scared straight. I still just went on doing what I was doing. And in the back of my mind, I just basically started thinking I might as well enjoy everything as much as I can, because you never know when this, that, or the other might happen. So it was always in the back of my mind, but it didn't. I mean, I still went out and ate. My sugar still ran high sometimes. You know, I still partied and things like that. But I wouldn't say it scared me straight, but it also did kind of, I guess, in a way, I don't want to say help, but I guess it just always made me aware of the fact that, you know, I might have issues later on. So I might as well enjoy things as much as I can. If that makes sense.
Like, it does make sense. I've heard other people say it. That to me seems like the danger of it. Like, if you tell somebody, hey, if you keep going like this, bad things are going to happen. But then they don't tell you how to stop going like this, whatever that means.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, you have no tools. You just have the consequence in front of you. And
right, because right. It's not like they told me what to do after that. It's exactly. Not like, yeah, exactly.
It's my biggest pet peeve with doctors is they like to tell you, like, you know, the X is going to happen if you don't fix it, but they don't tell you what fix it is. And, you know, or right. They, I don't know if they assume, you know, I can't tell, Rosalind, I can't tell if they assume, you know, or if they don't know how to explain to you how to achieve it. I can never figure out exactly. Maybe it's sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just bad communication. Maybe sometimes it's a doctor who doesn't understand what to tell you. Like, I don't know the difference, but it's upsetting because then you have this conversation with somebody 30 years later and you're like, hey, you know, I didn't know what to do. And, you know, would you have worked at it if you knew?
I think so. But I think also a lot of it also has to do with the fact that if they don't have a lifelong condition, they don't understand how difficult it could be to manage that mm-hmm. along with life. If that makes sense.
No, it does.
And I think they think that those quick courses that they give you of counting carbs or the exchange diet, which is what they did back then, like they think that in 1 week that they teach you all that, that that's just what you're going to go by forever.
Yeah.
They don't. Yeah. I think it's a lot. And then also the fact that what they see you for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So
I definitely think the mix of the problem is a little bit that most medications are like, hey, take this in the morning on an empty stomach or, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I do think they feed out that diabetes information in the same way. You just count this, you do this, you push the button here, it's all going to be fine. Right. You know, don't worry
absolutely.
About
it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I went on shots, when I'm the pens, I remember they gave me a class on how to carb count. Until then, I didn't know how to carb count because I was still on NPH and regular.
Yeah.
So now fast forward to the Lantus and the Humalog, I had a class for like an hour, I think. And I remember, I think it was a nurse. And so she taught me how to carb count. And so what she told me was 1 unit per 15 carbs. And I remember going home that day and thinking I counted correctly. And I gave myself way too much insulin and I started dropping. I remember like sweating and I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? And then after that, I was like, I need to figure this out on my own because they really, what they were telling me wasn't working. Yeah. So I kind of just tried to figure it out on my own, just like I had a scare with Atlantis where I was told to take it in the mornings. No, I'm sorry, in the evenings. They told me to take it in the evenings. And then I would wake up and I would be really low during the night. So what I did was I started taking it in the mornings and that helped a little bit.
And that's you around 22 years old, right? Like in your early 20s?
Yes.
When you started shooting? Right, right. So see, this is interesting because you had an experience and then said to yourself, that's not right. I'm going to have to experiment. But some people have that experience over and over again, and they do not have the nerve to break free of what the doctor told them. Like, why were you so comfortable saying, I'm not going to do this overnight. I'll do it during the day.
I really can't tell you. I just knew I was scared to go to sleep at night and not wake up. So I was like, okay, maybe I can try this in the morning. At the end of the day, it didn't make sense to me. I'm like, what is the point? I was always used to doing my NPH and regular in the morning, not before bedtime. So I guess I just applied that idea to the Atlantis.
You just applied common sense. Like if I'm going to get low, I'd like to be awake while it's happening.
Correct. Yeah.
It's that simple, isn't it? Wow. Isn't that interesting? And so just your personality, do you kind of not take crap from people, generally speaking?
I think so.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, sure. I don't want to sound harsh, but I don't take people.
You're right.
No, it just, because you see what I'm saying? Like there are plenty of people who will struggle for their life doing a thing that they absolutely, as they're doing it, think this is not the right thing to do.
Right.
And yet it's what the doctor told them and they won't break free from it. So good for you. Congratulations. But still, even having done that in your early 20s, you're still getting 7.5, 8 A1Cs, like, you know, get it down to the sixes for a pregnancy. Baby's born, back kind of to how you're doing it. You have another little, I mean, it looks like if he was 7 and she's 9.
She was 3.
She was a baby when he was diagnosed.
Four, 3.5 or 4.
Okay.
And another thing to what you said before that, another thing I had pushback from the doctors was I would always test my blood sugar. They recommended before meals. And I remember this so vividly, no matter who the endo was, they were always asking me, why are you testing so much? Because I was testing sometimes up to 9-10 times a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they couldn't wrap their head around why I was doing it that often. And I remember having to tell them, I'm exercising. So I need to know where my blood sugar is before I start exercising. Mm-hmm. Or I need to know if I'm low or not before I get in a car, before I start driving. And so that was another pushback I got. They would always ask me, why are you testing so often? You're only supposed to test before meals.
Two things that happened to me when Arden was younger that stuck in my head, and I still, like, I can picture the scenario I was in when it was said to me. So the first one is, similar to you, I said, hey, listen, she's eating, and like an hour and a half after she eats, her blood sugar's spiking up. And do you know what they said to me? Stop testing then.
Wow.
And I'm like, I was like, stop, hold on a second. So her blood sugar is getting really high and I want to know what it's doing so I can figure out how to stop it. And they're like, does it come back down? And I'm like, yeah, they go, then don't worry about it. I'm like, but no, but like it could go to 300 or more.
Right. I was told the same thing.
Yeah. Just don't test then. And I was like, so we're going to go with head in the sand on this one. I was like, that's your vibe. And the other thing around insulin that was said to me, and testing specifically, that I just like shocked me immediately, is I said, well, how often do I have to test her overnight? And they said, you don't have to test overnight. And I was like, well, if I don't have to test overnight, why do I have to test during the day? And just the blank stare. Like I said, what's the difference between being asleep and being awake? I'm like, I don't understand.
Right.
You need to get sleep. And I was like, that doesn't address the problem of her blood sugar. And it's fascinating. Like, there's no common sense in either of those statements.
Right.
And that's what people were told for freaking ever. Just forever.
Yeah, they just tell you, I think they just tell you whatever it takes to just make it quick and just get out. I need to see the next person, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I like how honest you are about that. You're like, I just think they want you out of there.
That's what I've noticed. You know, they have a waiting room full of people. You're just another number. They're just trying to get you out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that after everything I've learned with myself, and especially after my son, when you're diagnosed with something, it's kind of your own responsibility, I guess, to do your own research, because honestly, you're on your own, unfortunately.
The person who made those two statements to me, I think, is a very well-intended, lovely person, and who actually cared about Arden, right? But to say, to give me those two answers, just don't look after she eats and you don't have to look at night, that's a complete misunderstanding of insulin.
Right.
Unless you understand how it works, you're deciding to concede for me that we can't be successful and healthy. So why bother looking? Like, if that's what they, so it's one or the other. She either didn't know what she was talking about or didn't think it was possible to fix, even though she understood the mechanics of it. I don't know. It's very upsetting to me. Trust me.
Right.
That was maybe 13 years ago. I can make myself upset right now about that if I think about it.
Yeah, it's because how many people don't receive the same advice and literally just follow that? And then, you know, that creates all the issues and complications probably.
For so many people.
I was told the same thing with my son when he first started going to the doctor's visits. So they would say, it's been 2 hours since he ate. So that's pretty normal that his sugars are going to be elevated. Yeah. He'll eventually come down. They used to tell me the same thing.
It's something else. I don't know. It's like I said, I get upset when I think about it. So, all right. So anyway, so he's diagnosed, and what happens? Their endo tries to put him on a CGM, or, by the way, are you using a CGM during any of this time?
Well, that's another story. So after I have my daughter, she was born 2013. I guess the Dexcom 4 had just come out. Mm-hmm. And so the endo gives me, or puts me on the Dexcom. It worked great. But unfortunately, I had to stop using it because I would have horrible skin rashes. And I remember calling Dexcom and saying, is there a way I can fix this? What can I do? I really need it. I really want it, but I can't handle these rashes. I mean, my skin would be raw. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they didn't have an answer for me. I didn't know about diabetes groups on Facebook or anything like that. So I just stopped using the Dexcom.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we know, well, first of all, those original devices, that adhesive was like duct tape. It really held.
Yeah,
it really held on. And they've learned over time. I mean, all of them, but Dexcom specifically, they learned over time. Like, we have to find a balance between how much this sticks and how much it irritates people's skin. And they do a good job with it, like, over the generations of figuring out. But yeah, you got in too early, basically. And then had a problem and never got back to it. When's the next time you thought about a CGM again after that?
I thought about a CGM after that when my son was diagnosed. Wow. So when in 2018, when he was diagnosed, I remember in the hospital, I asked, are there any support groups that you guys have? Anything? Because I need support. I need to know what's going on. I need to know what to do. And so basically they're like, no, I'm sorry, I don't have anything. So then I started looking in Facebook and I joined some groups there, and I started seeing everyone talking about Dexcom and then also the Libre. Mm-hmm. So when I asked his endo, they said that he got diagnosed right when the Dexcom G6 was about to come out.
Okay.
So what she told me was he got diagnosed in May. And if I remember correctly, the G6 was released like in July. Mm-hmm. So she said that in 2 months, we can go ahead and put him on the G6. There's no point on putting him on the 5. I said, okay, well, if he can't have that for whatever reason you're saying, what about the Libre? And then I remember I got him on the Libre because I don't remember what was her reason for making me wait or not giving me the Libre, but she eventually gave me the Libre, the prescription for the Libre, because I told her, oh, they wanted me to check him at 12 midnight every night. Mm. And I'm like, okay, me and my husband both work. And if there's something available where it could be a little bit easier or give me peace of mind when he goes to school, why can't I just have this in the meantime?
Yeah.
So they finally let me have the Libre. And I remember having to wake up and swipe them in the middle of the night and all that good stuff. And then eventually, as soon as the Dexcom came out, we went ahead and he got on the G6. And then he started complaining of the itching as well. And that's when the parent group started helping, because I realized, oh, I could just spray some Flonase on him and he'll be fine.
Isn't that crazy? Of all the weird things that the internet has figured out.
I felt so frustrated. I was like, where was this 3-4 years ago? I could have been fine.
Yeah.
So I then, of course, then I got on it as well. So then we were both on the Dexcom. Mm.
Yeah, sometimes I see stuff like that. I'm like, way to go, internet. That's amazing. Like, who's the first person who was like, I'll spray Flonase on it, let it dry, and then put it on? Like,
right.
What?
Right. Yes.
Who thought of that? Rosalind, I have such an inappropriate story I've told on the podcast before, and I'm not going to embarrass you with it here, but I used Flonase once for something that it's not meant for, and it really saved me too.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you afterwards. So, it's such a dumb story. Anyway, maybe at the end, not right now. So, okay, so he's a G6, and then does he get a pump pretty immediately?
He gets a pump. So my son is very interesting. He's a very, I don't know, he's wise beyond his years. He's very, like, with it. I remember coming home with him, and my hands used to literally shake whenever I had to give him a shot. Mm. So 2 weeks into diagnosis, he's like, I can do it. I'm going to do it. And we were like, okay, you are? And he said, yes, I got it. I was like, cool. And he did it. So then fast forward to another year, I think he was 8. I send him to a weekend diabetes camp that they had in Florida. So he goes, and I guess he sees other kids with an Omnipod. Mm-hmm. And he comes back and says, Mom, I really want that. The kids have like a remote and they can just test. I mean, they can just give themselves insulin so I don't have to do shots.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, we'll talk to the doctor. And I had asked from before also, because once I started listening to your podcast, which is, I found it in one of those parent groups, someone said Juicebox podcast. Mm-hmm. And so I started listening to you in 2018. He must have been like 2 weeks in diagnosis. And so I remember when I initially asked where he was still honeymooning, he honeymooned for a long time because we caught it so early.
Right.
And so they said he wasn't on enough insulin to be able to use the Omnipod.
At first. Okay.
And, right. Yeah. So it wasn't until 2020 that he was finally able to get on the Omnipod.
I see. I by the way, I love that your seven-year-old at that point watched you shaking with that needle and thought, this lady's not my best bet. I bet.
Yeah, he's very, he's like that. Even with the celiac diagnosis, he's like, I'm fine. I got it. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, are you really though? Because sometimes I can't believe he's like that.
But how many times do you inject yourself every day at that point? I mean,
When he's diagnosed,
you're injecting still. How come you couldn't do it to him?
I think I was just a mess.
Yeah.
I was just a mess. I took it really, really hard. I was really, really sad. And it just, I don't know. I was just a mess.
Heartbreaking, right? To do
it. I'm sorry?
It's heartbreaking to do it. Like, especially in the beginning.
It is. I just couldn't believe that he would have to go through what I, you know, have been going through all these years. And I think what especially broke my heart was that at least I got diagnosed at 12. He was 7. Mm. And so it was really difficult for me. But I think he's a really strong kid. And I think it also helped, I think, at least that's what my husband says, the fact that he sees me doing it. He would always see me injecting myself in the morning before heading out the door to go to work and school.
Right.
So I guess he's just like, okay, this is just what we do. She looks fine, so I'll be fine.
Yeah. It's a family thing, I guess. Yeah. Well, like red hair. I guess this is what we have. That's pretty great. He sounds terrific. Absolutely. Let me make sure I understand this. Now that it's not you, it's him. You're like, we need to do a good job. And I don't have enough information, even though I've been at this for nearly 30 years at that point. And so I'm going to go out into the world. I'm going to find some support, see what other people are saying. I mean, I'm assuming it's a life jacket thing like you, but it's not, right? Like you get him first. You don't figure it out for yourself and then go to him. You figure him out and then relay it back to your own care.
I think it kind of happened at the same time.
Okay.
I remember when he was in the hospital, it was a weekend. And so they figured well, you have it, so it should be fine. But we still want you to make sure your husband understands carb counting as well. Well, little did they know, I honestly had never really carb counted. So we're sitting there learning how to carb count. And my husband's actually doing better than me.
Well, he also knows what diabetes looks like because he saw it on your kid in 2 seconds. That's like you said earlier, you're like, I don't know why he saw it so quickly. But what I thought was he's been watching you.
Probably because I remember, I mean, I feel so bad for him afterwards because at night when I would have lows, before, you know, I didn't have a Dexcom. So he would be the one waking me up, you know, sometimes. And I guess, and then he eventually told me, you know, this is what I had to do all the time with you because you would sweat. And when I would see you sweating or you wouldn't move, I knew something was wrong.
Mm. Yeah. It's funny. He thought of the sweating as a low blood sugar, right?
Right.
But so he saw your son sweating and thought diabetes, but he was probably sweating because his body was just working so hard at, you know, trying to stay alive at that point when his blood sugar was high. Right. Isn't that crazy? Good for him and good for all of you, honestly. And it's lovely to hear how well your husband takes care of you too and looks out for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I've heard some episodes where people talk about their spouses and how some of them are not that like vested into it or whatnot. And it's interesting because I remember when I started on the Dexcom after my son, he wanted to follow me and I told him absolutely not. He was so mad. Of course, I eventually let him follow me, but until then it had been my thing. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So I was just used to, I took care of it. I got it. Don't worry about it. And he's like, well, I need to know. What about when I'm at work and you're at home with the kids? How can I not know what your sugar is? Why don't you want me to know? Mm. And so, yeah, it was very interesting how that also switched, because until that moment, I think he didn't know what diabetes all entailed. And also I felt like it was something that was just mine for me to take care of. And I didn't need anyone to help me. Mm.
You also, by the way, coming up through regular MPH, you didn't know all it entailed in a modern world until you started worrying for your son and paying attention to what other people were doing. And then it brings you along. So I have to ask you, like, what's your A1C now?
Right now I'm at 6.2.
Look at you. See, and that's not you freaking out because you're pregnant. That's just how you live.
Exactly. Yeah,
good for you. That's wonderful. And your son, similar?
Yes, he's also at like 6.2. The highest he's ever been, I think, was 6.7.
Oh, that's terrific.
And that's middle school. That was a whole, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you eat rice again or do you not like it anymore?
Oh, no, we eat rice. Yeah. We eat everything.
I was going to say, you're back. You're like, hey, I figured out insulin. Get me that rice back.
Yeah. I figured it all out. Thankfully, to listening to your podcast, that was a big help, to be honest with you.
Oh, I'm glad.
Especially in the beginning. Oh, yeah. Well, that's nice to know. I remember listening to your first few episodes. I mean, I've listened to all of them for the most part. And I was like, oh, my gosh, he does it like how I do it, because they were really strict about wanting me to count carbs. And I'm like, I don't do that. I can just look at something and at least for myself and kind of know how much I need. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I started doing it for him. And it wasn't that it wasn't working, but they wanted me to do it their way by counting. And I was like, that's kind of like not how I do it. And so I just learned how to, after listening to, I think I forgot which episode it was, but I was like, well, you know, if his daughter's doing great and this is how he does it, I'm pretty sure I can continue to do it the way I've always done it. And my son's going to be fine.
Right. Yeah. I think what works is what's best. And, you know, right. And that's what works for you. But you can't lie to yourself. You can't say, oh, no, it's fine. Like I have some people say, oh, my A1Cs have been great. And I know A1C, like, I know we're looking at time and range too. I'm just using this as an example. But I hear people say, like, oh, my A1Cs are great. I'm like, oh, I used to think when people said that, oh, they think great means what I think great means. But then I learned to say, well, what is it? And they say, oh, it's been in the sevens. And I'm like, well, that's by the way, it's hard work and well done, et cetera, but it's not a great A1C. And, you know, like, so, like, you know, what is it about their management style that's leaving them at a seven? What could they be doing slightly different that would make it a six or lower or whatever? And, you know, I think you have to have those conversations or else people kind of, I don't know, they kind of float to the middle of what their understanding is. Like if at some point, I mean, I think ADA still says seven's a target A1C. So
I believe so.
Yeah. So if your doctor's telling you, hey, listen, we're happy around seven, and you float up to 7.8, sometimes he goes, don't worry about it. Like, you know, now in your head, you're like, well, 7 to 8's okay. And, you know, if just understanding how insulin worked a little differently or how the food was impacting you or something like that could take that number and bring it into the sixes, I mean, that's a conversation worth having, in my opinion. So, you know, I love that happened for you. And it's funny, right? You didn't want your husband looking at your CGM. But when it came to your son, you were like, I'm happy to let anybody give me advice, anybody at all. Like, I'll go out in the world and find people, not your husband, but other people. I want unmarried men to hear that so they know what to expect one day. But by the way, vice versa, ladies, it's going to happen to you too. You'll be like, he doesn't listen to me. He listens to everyone else.
It's true.
Yeah. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here for you because in your notes, it says that, are you untethered?
Okay, so that's the reason why I wrote to you last year.
Yeah.
Not me, my son.
Okay.
So when he started middle school, sixth grade, 2 years, he's in eighth grade now. So that was 2 years ago. His blood sugar, he was very, very thin. And so the pods would sometimes fall off, or the sites would become like, I don't know, blocked, I guess is the word. I forgot. Or he would always complain that it would hurt. He would always have an issue with the pods, especially while he was in school. So a couple years ago, I had listened to another podcast. Can't remember her name, but she had just mentioned in passing that her son was going through puberty and that he was untethered. So basically, he was taking Traceba, but still on his pump because he was on so much insulin. Mm-hmm. My son had just, you know, he was 11, 12. He started puberty. You know, you could tell the changes, growing, voice change, all that. And the blood sugars were just insane.
Yeah.
And I felt like I couldn't keep up. And so I asked the doctor again. I said, hey, can we do this? Can I give him a little bit of extra Traceba while his pump is still working? Because my fear is that he's going to go into DKA or something happen while he's in school and I'm not going to be able to make it on time to school, or he's not going to pay attention to it. She told me I couldn't do that. She said something about the pump getting air in it.
Wait.
And it just didn't make sense.
Yeah, that's not an accurate description of your question at all. The idea of being untethered, I don't even know where that word came from. You would shoot your basal insulin like you were on MDI, and some people then would just use their pumps for meal and corrections, or sometimes they would split it a little bit of basal from the pump, a little bit of basal from the MDI. You can see that sometimes with people who have like significant insulin needs, because you can flood your pump sites if you're using a ton of insulin through them, and it makes them kind of less effective sometimes.
Right. And I think that's what was happening to him. He was on so much insulin at that point. I mean, I kept changing his basal rates. I kept telling him to bolus more for lunch. And I mean, his blood sugars were just constantly high while he was in school.
Right.
So what I decided to do was, I said, let's start with giving him 7 units of Traceba and then just still keep his basal going.
I like how this story went from your doctor told you no to how you did it.
So, like, oh, yeah, because I just couldn't sit there and watch it anymore. I was at work every day looking at his Dexcom, and the moment lunch would come, not even that, just breakfast. Mm. And I would always ask him, I'm like, what are you eating? What are you doing? I mean, that's a whole other story. Eventually, we found out he was having lunch from home and also school. But yes,
he's having 2 lunches.
He was. He's a big eater. That's not great. A big guy, not a big kid, but he eats a lot.
Yeah.
And so
if the doctor said no, where did you get the Traceba from?
Oh, I was still MDI.
Oh, you're so using yours. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, earlier when I said, do you not take crap from people, and you acted all demure, I feel like there's a whole other part of you that could have answered a completely different way.
Probably. I mean, I don't see it that way. I just see, like, I don't know. I just feel like if someone tells you no, just keep trying to figure it out until someone says yeah, or you figure it out yourself, I guess. I don't know.
Rosalyn, I've been talking to you for 45 minutes now. Like, your common sense is really strong. It's impressive, actually. So every time you've been intersected with a problem throughout your story, you actually revert back to common sense and you follow it, which is very cool. And you did it here with this too. So good for how long did he doesn't still do that, or he does?
He does not. So he did that for a good year. Mm-hmm. It did help a little bit. It helped because we stopped having pod failures,
right?
And occlusions. It helped with that. And it also helped stabilize his blood sugar a little bit more. He was still getting high, but it wasn't as bad as before.
Right.
And at least I knew, okay, if he has a pod failure or like is not dosing correctly or whatnot, at least he still has that background insulin in him.
Mm-hmm. I hear people talking about now too, they're pumping, but they also got themselves a prescription for Afrezza, the inhaled insulin. And when they get when they get tough spikes or sticky highs, they'll use the Afrezza to break the high, but the pump does everything else. It's very interesting when people get, I don't know, a little DIY about diabetes and like the Flonase idea, like, oh, look what the internet figured out. You know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that Instagram, Facebook groups, and your podcast have been a great help, because you just hear something and it kind of sticks to you. And you're like, wait, let me try that. Mm. I've never thought of that. And then you just try it, and it either works for you or it doesn't. And I just tried, you know? Yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, is your daughter, did you do TrialNet or anything to see if she had any antibodies?
I tried TrialNet for her, and her antibodies were negative. That was in 2018.
Okay.
Then fast forward to a year later, I picked her up from summer camp one day, and she's like, she tells me she doesn't feel well. And I decide to check her blood sugar, and I'll never forget this. It was 194. Mm. So I freak out. I asked her, what does she have? She says she had a cookie and a juice. So I'm rushing home. I get home, I check her blood sugar again. It was like 117, 120. I was still afraid, so I took her to the doctor to get blood work done. And this was the second time that I had her tested through my son's endo. And again, she didn't have antibodies. I guess her sugar just went high because they gave her too much sugar.
I'll sound like a hippie for a second. You shouldn't drink fruit or vegetables. Like, you shouldn't be blending things. Well, I don't know, vegetables, but like, you shouldn't be blending fruit down and drinking it. It is not good for you. Your body does not know how to handle it like that. So, yeah, that's why it's so effective at bringing up a low for a person with type one and battling that, what that insulin's doing, because it's just, it's, I don't know, your system's just not meant to drink juice. And by the way, I don't just mean like, you know, like something that a company makes and sticks in a juice box. I'm talking about orange juice, pineapple juice, like that stuff is hard on your system. So,
right, because it's so many oranges for one glass instead of just having one orange and moving right along. Yeah, I get it.
The glycemic index for that is insane. It's just, it's a ton of sugar. So anyway, whatever. Look at me. I'm like, yeah, do what you want. But I'm just saying.
No, after that, I never gave her juice again. Yeah, I mean, she was one of those kids who loved juice. I mean, now she'll have like the Capri Suns that have like 5 grams or 6 grams of sugar, but that's it. She will not have a juicy juice ever again, which is what they used to give them in school.
Yeah. Oh, listen, look how far you've come from your mom, like laying those orange sodas on everybody.
I know. Yeah, I know.
People don't know. Like, listen, you're not my age, but you could buy a 2 liter bottle of soda for 50 cents. And it was a lot of liquid, and it was sweet, and people liked it. And, you know, you could, the house was stocked with it. Like, we used to have it like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It was everywhere. Like, the countertops, there was like soda bottles lined up everywhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially our generations that they weren't as health conscious as now. Now everyone's low sugar, low fat, organic. But back then, you just ate whatever was there.
Yeah. Whatever was cheap and available. That was food. So, yeah. Right. My God, the pizza they would serve us at school. I mean, I don't even know how to describe that. It's like if you know what like an Elio's frozen pizza is, that's bare bones frozen pizza. I don't think the pizza at school was that good even.
It was not. It's funny because my daughter hates school lunch. I have to make her lunch. She brings in lunch every day. Mm-hmm. And so does my son, especially now with the celiac. But I'm like, she hates school lunch.
Arden moved from her freshman to her sophomore year in college to an apartment that had a kitchen. Cause she's like, I can't keep eating here. It's killing me. Like,
yeah, it's gross.
No, she came home with weight on. She came home with like her A1C was up. Like her, she's like, Dad, you should see how much insulin I'm trying to use, like, to keep this down. She's like, I got to get a kitchen. And that's what she's doing now. And boom, you can see it right away though. Just the processed food and, I don't know, all the fat and salt they put in things so that it tastes better. And it's just, you know, not good for you.
So. Yeah, it's awful. It's awful. Yeah, it's absolutely so hard on your body and on your sugars, because, and especially when you eat something like that, it's like your sugar stays high forever. It's like it doesn't want to come down.
Oh, yeah. She said she didn't feel well yesterday. It's so weird for your kid to be sick, like, and not with you. Like, it's a hard thing to get past. You'll see when your kids get older. It's a terrible feeling.
Oh, yeah.
But she just like, she called me in the nighttime. She goes, man, my stomach hurts. Like I'm sick. I feel nauseous. And she's like, I'm just going to lay down. And, you know, she's, you know, gets up the next day and it doesn't feel good in the morning, but eventually feels better. And she's like, great. And then the afternoon comes and I'm talking to her yesterday afternoon. We're FaceTiming and she's telling me about how one of her classes went, and her roommate comes in the room and goes, yo, you want to go out and get this? And Arden goes, I really don't want to cook today. Like, yeah, let's do that. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to go. You go ahead and go and do what you're going to do. Her blood sugar was not good for like 3 hours after she ate. And I texted her and I was like, hey, you miscalculated this meal. Like, you know, just, you got to hit it again. It's not, you know, you're not making a dent in this. And the algorithm, by the way, is humping, trying to get it down. It's not working. And I'm like, you know, you need to add more carbs or more insulin or something like that. But that was just one time of her getting into a groove of bolusing for food that she's made herself and bought at the grocery store versus going to a restaurant. And then she was struggling again and didn't, you know, all the regular amount of insulin she should have used for a meal like that, that she would have made, did not work when they bought it at a place. So,
It's crazy. And she actually doesn't live far from me, because I've seen that you posted she's out in Savannah. We recently moved over here, not far from there.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Have you been in the South? You were in Florida, so you moved north a little bit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Do you like it?
It's very different from where I used to live at, because even though Florida is in the South, I lived in Miami, so it's a very different, it's not different South vibe at all.
Miami's its own place. It should be its own state.
It surely is. Everyone, yes, if you know, you know. It surely is. So it's been very different, but it's good.
Nice. Arden says it's a little too slow for her.
It is. It's very slow, but we actually moved here because my husband started working at a job here.
Okay.
And so we just decided to move the family here, because at the end of the day, Miami is very fast paced and in my opinion, not the best place to raise kids. So,
well, I mean, what if you want to give them a Coke habit?
Then it's not... or party all the time. I'm like, yeah, this is not working.
Then it's not bad. Arden says, I love it here. It's a lovely place. It's too slow for me. I don't want to live in the South. And she's like, she goes, don't get me wrong, I'm thrilled to go to college here. This place is wonderful and everything. But I don't want to stay here. We're like, okay, well.
Oh, yeah. My son says that already. He's like, once in 5, because he already has his life planned out. I'm like, that's okay. I don't want to stay here either. Once you guys are old enough and leave, I'm out of here too.
And daddy can come if he wants to, but I'm getting out of here. It's fantastic. Have we covered everything you wanted to talk about? Have we missed anything?
No, I think we covered everything except that I didn't talk about his celiac diagnosis and how that was kind of like similar to the same thing they tell you with diabetes. It's interesting. Once we moved here, he had a new endo, and so they ran all the blood work all over again. Mm-hmm. For some reason, that was interesting in itself as well. That's another thing I should add as to why I'm not crazy about living here. The healthcare here, in my opinion, is not great.
Yeah, a little downslide in the quality of the doctors you're seeing?
Not just the quality, the quantity, actually. There's only like a few endos. There's only one pediatric GI, which to me is insane. Mm,
okay.
Yeah, it's been, even for me, there's like only a handful of endos over here. And it's been really difficult to find one that I like. I don't like any of them. And then I just have to stay with the one I have. So luckily for me, I know what I'm doing, because I mean... I don't want to keep going, but for a short while, I worked at an endo office here, and it's really sad to see how people here manage their diabetes and how poorly they're doing. It was really sad. Yeah. I actually had to stop working there because I couldn't see it anymore.
It's bumming you out. Really? Just the level of understanding that they had as patients or as the doctors had, or both?
Both. The level they had as patients, and I also got to see it from the other side. There's only so much a doctor can do when they have so many patients, mm-hmm. and only a certain amount of time per patient. And this person's coming to you and you're trying to help them, but there's only so much you can do to help.
Yeah, they don't understand, right? And yeah,
they really don't. I think that's another thing. I think a lot of them just don't understand. They mm-hmm. can't wrap their head around it.
Yeah. No, I believe that too. I get to see, between the Facebook page and the podcast, I see a lot of people, like tens of thousands of people, talking about their diabetes. And it's, I think you're right. I think there's some people who have a basic understanding. There's some people who have a slightly better understanding. There's some people who are like superheroes at it. And there are some people that when you watch them, it feels like no one's ever even like mentioned to them what's going on. They're just,
right. Yeah. I just think they think that this is like, okay, I have diabetes. I'm just going to end up in a bad place. It is what it is. I mean, I saw it all from younger people to older people. And I mean, just to hear their blood sugar, I'm like, how are they walking in here? Like,
now, it's that, like, I've got the sugars feeling and this is my lot. Right. This is my lot in life, and this is what gets me, and I guess this is how it goes. And it's so sad because you know it's, it doesn't have to be like that. And yet it does end up that way for a lot of people.
So. Yeah, man, I think, yeah, definitely. And the healthcare here, you know, it doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't help. There's, like I said, there's not a lot of doctors that you can choose from. You just have to stick to whoever has an opening. And you just, it's like, good luck. And so when I took my son to this endo, which is what was covered by our insurance, and not that there's any other endos around, I was taken aback because he asked me if I was sure my son had type 1 diabetes. I was like, yes, it's 2018, and I'm also type 1. And so he just gives me a look, and he goes, well, we're just going to run all the blood work. So he goes ahead and does that.
You've had diabetes for 30 years. Your son's had it for 5 years, and he said, are you sure you have type 1?
Well, and not only that, and then he also asked me if I was willing to talk to other parents.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, he saw your A1Cs and he's like, you want a job?
Right. Right. Are you willing to talk to other parents about type 1? And I'm like, I guess if you want me to, because I guess he was seeing some really bad stuff. And I can only imagine, because at the time I was working in another office and I knew, and I'm like, if you want me to help, I could help, but I mean, I'm not a medical professional per se. I was just working at a front desk. Basically, he ran the blood work. And then when we go to the next visit, he says that my son's, the markers for celiac were a bit elevated, and he was referring us to the GI. So he goes, and he had to have an endoscopy, which of course came back that he had damage and that he had celiac. And so when they tell us this, I thought it was absolutely horrible that we're sitting there with my son, and in comes the doctor. And basically part of her explanation was that if he doesn't follow what he, you know, a gluten-free diet, he could end up having cancer. And I'm like, who says that in front of a kid? Like, really?
Oh, my God. I've talked to so many people who've got that, like, that scare tactic from right. GI doctors. Like, and by the way, I'm not saying it can't happen. It certainly could. Right. But I mean, that's a pretty aggressive, like, first step for that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
correct.
Yeah. Wow.
Not only that, maybe that's something you might want to mention to me when he's not in the room. Yeah. You know?
Hey, can we talk in the hall for a second?
Right. So needless to say, I was a mess when I left that place again. Yeah. It was like reliving another diagnosis. It was very difficult, but he's taking it like a champ. Mm-hmm. He's doing what he needs to do. But it's definitely not easy having more than one autoimmune, especially not celiac. And I've learned that a lot of people actually have both. But yeah, I would say if I had to choose one, I'd say type 1. And that's what he says as well. Yeah.
I have to tell you that so many people are so poor communicators is fascinating to me. I mean, what does that look like? Like, hey, buddy, do you like Spider-Man? You do? Oh, yeah. Do you like Tom Holland or the other guy? Oh, that one? That's great. If you eat bread, you're going to get cancer. Oh, great. What in the hell? Like seriously, what, it's so frustrating. Yeah. It is really, really very frustrating. Good. You know, like it would have been a hard thing to say to you, like to pull you aside right. and go, hey, listen, this is not, you know, whatever the stats are about it. Maybe it's not incredibly common, but you need to know if this is a thing you just go home and just blindly ignore, because some people have that quiet celiac, right? Where it's doing the damage, but they don't have pain from it. So they
which just, is what was happening to my son.
I get that they need to get it through to you, that you can't just go home and ignore it because there's not going to be any symptoms. But my goodness, like whatever, I don't know. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it was not great. Yeah. And needless to say, I was trying to find another doctor, but there's that's the only there. GI that there is in town for pediatrics. So,
yeah, I feel very lucky about the person we moved Arden to as an adult, because I mean, she doesn't even do type 1 anymore, but we were just like, please. And it's I don't know if you've ever heard the thyroid episodes. There's an episode with Dr. Benito, and she came on and explained thyroid stuff so beautifully. And she manages everyone's thyroid in my family. But when Arden had to leave the pediatric endo, I called her and I was like, is there any chance you would see Arden for her type 1? I'm like, we won't be any trouble. Like, you know, I just need you to run some labs and write some scripts. And she's like, yeah, no problem. And I was like, oh, that's great. But it already freaks me out. She's like, you know, she's not an old lady, but she's an adult. I'm like, she's not going to be in practice for as long as Arden needs somebody. And so,
right.
Yeah, it's scary.
good doctors are hard to find. And not to say, I mean, his endo is not a bad doctor, though, because he even offered to just do the blood work to keep up with his levels for celiac, because I guess maybe he knows that he's not the best GI doctor.
I don't know what I'm doing. What did he say? What did he whisper? I don't know what I'm doing. Jesus, my God.
So when I went back to him after the, you know, he got diagnosed with celiac and he went back to his endo follow-up, he actually asked me, how did I like the doctor? And I said, I'm actually trying to find a second opinion.
Don't worry, we're also trying to get away from you too.
Right.
I can see a world where, listen, I'm a proponent of the idea of, like, something you mentioned, actually. I guess they used to do it a long time ago. You said there was basically, like, type 1 day for kids at your endo's office. Like, they, right. Yeah. I think you wouldn't need as many qualified doctors if they could see people in bigger groups. So if you found a great endo, but, I don't know, instead of seeing 10 people a day, you know, 15 minutes at a time, like, what if you just had 3 2-hour talks every day and 100 people could come to each talk, and you could just come in at any point during the week and sit down on one of those talks, and there'd always be a talk happening with a qualified person. And I mean, it becomes a HIPAA thing because people would want to talk out loud about their specific stuff. But I don't know that you couldn't do the big talk and then roll people into the small appointments, write their scripts, ask their personal questions, and get them out.
That would actually help a lot here because that's how they run it here. He only sees his type 1 patients on Wednesdays. Hmm.
I just think there's a better way to do it. And I mean, you need somebody to think about it and actually try something.
Right. If someone could figure it out, it would be great because it's really sad in places like here that I'm experiencing now. You know, a lot of these kids are going to grow up with type 1 from a very young age, and they're not going to have any knowledge of what they're really supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And 20 they grow years up from to now, they're going to have issues.
Yeah, they're going to have problems. No, for sure. Okay. Yeah, Rosalyn, I really appreciate you doing this. This was fantastic. Thank you for reaching out. Thank you for the nice stuff you said about the podcast. I'm thrilled that it helped you. And I really appreciate you sharing your story and your son's story. It was really fantastic. And like you said, well, I hope more people reach out with varying backgrounds and want to be on, because this was fantastic.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, we're coming from all types of places, backgrounds and everything. Type 1 definitely doesn't discriminate. So
no,
it's great to hear all the stories.
Yeah, no, that really is. It was just very kind of you to come on and talk about it like this. Thank you so much. Can you hold on for a second for me?
Sure.
Thanks. A huge thanks to US Med for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast. Don't forget, usmed.com/juicebox. This is where we get our diabetes supplies from. You can as well. Use the link or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or call the number, get your free benefits check so that you can start getting your diabetes supplies the way we do from US Med. I want to thank the Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box podcast. Learn more about its implantable sensor, smart transmitter, and terrific mobile application at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Get the only implantable sensor for long-term wear. Get Eversense. If you're ready to level up your diabetes care, the Diabetes Pro Tip Series from the Juice Box Podcast focuses on simple strategies for living well with type 1. The Pro Tip episodes contain easy-to-understand concepts that will increase your knowledge of how insulin works, and so much more. My daughter has had an A1C between 5.2 and 6.4 since 2014 with zero diet restrictions, and some of those years include her in college. This information works for children, adults, and for the newly diagnosed, and for those who have been struggling for years. Go to juiceboxpodcast.com and click on Diabetes Pro Tip in the menu, or head over to episode 1000 of the Juice Box Podcast to get started today with the episode Newly Diagnosed, We're Starting Over. And then continue right on to episode 1025. That's the entire Pro Tip series, episode 1000 to 1025. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, type 1 diabetes. But everybody is welcome. Type 1, type 2, gestational, loved ones, it doesn't matter to me. If you're impacted by diabetes and you're looking for support, comfort, or community, check out Juicebox Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juicebox Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.